Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When they gathered around and started talking, Cousin Billy would take me walking. Out through the backyard we go walking. Then he looked into my eyes. Lord knows to my surprise, the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. See what?
All right, folks. Welcome to the Kieran Clark edition of the On Par Radio Show. And it was the son of a preacher man who proved to be victorious at the 2016 Masters Tournament. Kieran, my friend, Kieran Clark of GolfShake.com. You can find him on Twitter at Kieran Clark Golf, at Kieran Clark Golf. How you doing, Kieran?
Well, Anthony, I must say, given we're sitting down here to do a podcast, it's probably not the best timing, but I am virtually speechless after what we've witnessed here at the Masters tonight. It was a really an astonishing back nine. You know, they always say that the Masters doesn't really start till the back nine on Sunday, and that's always been kind of a cliche. I think it's kind of overplayed, and it hasn't always rung true. But tonight, the tournament almost looked over by the end of the front nine, and the back nine certainly delivered drama. You know, really an astonishing finish, among the most, certainly one of the most talked about for many years going forward. Obviously, a shocking disaster, the disastrous sort of 30 minutes for Jordan Spieth. But the most incredible round from Danny Willett. He looked so assured. He was masterful. He was brilliant. He was confident. He barely missed a shot all day. It was one of the best final rounds, I think, from a Masters champion ever. I think he's only the third guy to shoot 67 or better to win on Sunday. So a remarkable Sunday, and one that I'm still trying to gather my thoughts around and try and put some words to.
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes we think these things can be like they're almost scripted, and it kind of felt that way coming in just because of the world golf rankings and the way the tournament opened up. You know, it seemed like you had this, you had Spieth, Rory, you had Jason Day popping his head in there, and you know, for a little while there, we're like, could this really be happening? And then the weather became the story, and sort of everything became put on the back burner because talk about cliches. Obviously, the U.S. Open broke out at the Masters, and so it was a little it was brutal. Brutal conditions for the players. Brutal, a little bit brutal, especially we were speaking earlier, as you said, on Saturday to watch. It was really just a real grind. It was cold. It was windy, and so it was a little tough to take, but it was the Masters, and so we eat it up. It started out promising, then it petered out a little bit, and then of course today, as you said, I'm, you know, the just trying to wrap my brain around everything that's happened is quite difficult because you almost don't know where to start. I mean, there was longer story yesterday. I mean, that was, I'm not sure anybody really gave him a real thought. I didn't give him a real thought, but I also thought that, you know, Adam Scott wasn't going to win again. So I just felt like if it was going to be a shootout, which I know that the tournament directors wanted, the weather was cooperating. I just didn't think he had enough firepower in him to get caught up in a shootout with anybody. So that, you know, that was kind of fun to have him in the mix, and you know, you know, I think that that weather kind of leveled everybody out, so it gave him an open door, and he's obviously, I mean, the man is a machine. I mean, it's just unbelievable the years he's endured, and the fact that he even was in that position. You know, I'm not sure what's more remarkable, his performance at 58 or Tom Watson's near win. I mean, just in terms of, you know, age intersecting with a major championship, both equally impressive, but he was quite a story for a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And his performance yesterday, the great shot making he had in those difficult conditions and the way he rolled his balls around the course, it reminded me very much of a performance he had a couple of years ago. He played the Senior Open Championship at Royal Porthcawl in Wales, and a really firm, fast course there. It was really uncooperative, and he produced really, I think, 4 days of the best golf I have seen in years. He won it by 13 shots. on any, and I mean any tour, LPGA, PGA tour, whatever, major championships, you can name it. I think that was up there with the best I've seen for years. And it felt like that yesterday. I think you're right there, when softer conditions today, more receptive pins, less wind, it was more of a shootout, and I think the other guys have more firepower than he had. But still, it's a remarkable showing for a golf course of that length. You mentioned Tom Watson there, who of course almost won the Open at Turnberry in 09. You know, for me, that golf course was perhaps more receptive at Turnberry for an older player, given it was shorter, it was a links course. And I think Tom Watson had a great knowledge and experience around that particular layout, of course, having won there so many times before in seniors and regular Opens. So, but for Watson to take that to the last hole and to the playoff certainly sets it apart from what Langer has done this weekend. But you can't take away from Langer. You know, a great showing from a guy who has continually performed over 30-odd years now. He's almost been, an underappreciated player for all this time. He's not flashy. He hasn't got the most outgoing personality, but you know, he's a fantastic player. And even with all his putting problems down the years, of course, the anchored putting, of course, has changed this year as well. But he's still stuck with a long putter, but uses it differently. He uses it legally, of course. So he still finds a way to get it done, and 59 this August he'll be something else. But I think you're right there. I think maybe today was one day too many, but it was still an incredible performance.
Yeah. So let's go from old to young, and let's talk about DeChambeau and his performance. He was not only impressive in his performance, but then the way he handled the media. I spoke with John Huggin over the weekend and was mentioning to him about how the media was kind of, you know, digging on him a little bit. You know, they were asking their normal questions, but he had the remarkable poise after hitting it out of bounds or taking it unplayable. And well, we all know what happened. So, and the fact that he kind of stood up and was like, listen, I'm still in this, and sort of he's a bit quirky, if you will, and I like quirky in golf, but I thought his performance on the course was as equally impressive as his press conference after the round.
Yeah, it was very good, and of course to handle that the way he did after that disaster on the last hole on Friday, you know, given the position he was really in at that point, and to take seven there, and of course he took six there last night as well on Saturday. So that hole was kind of the bugbear for DeChambeau this weekend. But yeah, a great performance from him. A lot of people expect him to play well. He talked a very good game coming in. He'd been there, I think, since the week prior. He'd played 11 practice rounds at Augusta before the tournament week even started. He'd been there with some members down around the winter time. So he really came into the event. He studied the course's history. He studied the history of Augusta National, particularly Bobby Jones. I think he became quite fascinated with the idea of potentially trying to win as an amateur to obviously commemorate Bobby Jones, who, of course, was the greatest amateur of all time. And, of course, he also discovered this past week, he heard about it before, but he saw it for himself, that Bobby Jones, the clubs Bobby Jones used to win the Grand Slam in 1930, were also equal-length irons, much like what DeChambeau has, which is quite an incredible coincidence. So it's a great performance from him. He's turned professional now, of course, and we'll see him at Hilton Head this coming week, where, you know, big things for him. He's a guy who has his own unique way of looking at golf and his kind of scientific approach to it. He's something different, and we love that. He's a guy that's unique. The game cries out for personalities and characters, and this boy is certainly one of them. And I look forward to seeing how he gets on this week coming up at Hilton Head and then going forward. I think he's got all the ability and certainly the mentality to potentially become one of the top players in the game. But, of course, that transition from amateur to pro isn't always an easy one.
No, it's not. And, you know, time will tell. You know, there's plenty of stories and of guys who have gone this path. And so, I think he kind of showed to me that that he has the mind, you know, not only the game to play on the tour, but I have a feeling he's going to stick. And so I think he'll be a welcomed addition to the tour, given his personality, given his analytical mind, given his quirky personality, if you will. I just think he'll be a nice addition to the PGA Tour, or the European Tour, whatever it is that whatever route he ends up taking. I'm sure he'd like to stay on the PGA Tour, but if he ends up having to go to the European Tour, I think he'll be a welcomed addition there as well. So, but good on him. It was a great experience for him. And if there's a way to go out and as an amateur, he certainly picked the right way to do it.
Oh, definitely. The low amateur, of course, is obviously a great price to have. And you're right there about, you know, being on the PGA Tour. He's going to be there, obviously, to get invitations and try and earn enough money to get his full-time card for next year, or FedEx Cup points, whatever it is nowadays they measure it by. But if he was to play on the European Tour, if he wasn't quite to get enough points to make the PGA Tour, or even to play the Web.com, that would be a massive boost for those tours. But I suppose in some ways, if DeChambeau just narrowly misses out on his full-time card for next year on the PGA Tour, it might bring up the old adage of, you know, why did the PGA Tour get rid of Q School? Because that was always the most sort of fascinating thing every year. And sure, they kind of lost that in recent years, of course, with the new final system they have in the Web.com Tour. So, but DeChambeau is a guy who I think he's very confident. He doesn't hold back in his self-belief, and that's fine. You've got to have that to succeed at the top level, of course. All these guys have it. And he brings that unique approach to it. So he's certainly going to be a fascinating character. And I must say, I'm not a fan of baseball hats and caps. So I do like his little, as we would say in Scotland, he wears a little bonnet on his head and it looks great.
Is that what you call it, a bonnet?
A bonnet, yes, a bonnet.
Fantastic, fantastic. I did not know that.
There you
that.
Go.
All right, so see, we're always learning something here. All right, so let's move on to Sunday.
Yes.
You know, I don't even know. I mean, I've never needed a defibrillator in the middle of a golf round, but I sort of, you know, I had gone into, I feel like I'd gone into like a little bit of a shock because of all the people on the leaderboard, I think Jordan Spieth would have been the last person that I would have, I would have picked to have the meltdown. If there was going to be a meltdown, if we said, hey, there's going to be a meltdown, you got to watch, we're not going to tell you who it is, nobody mm-hmm. would have picked Spieth. But it goes to show that not only is he human, we all know that, but the fact that I just think that he was taxed. I really do. I think he hadn't played all that great coming in. I mean, we've talked about it. I don't think, you know, I planned on giving him the entire year, quite frankly, given the year that he had last year as enough mm-hmm. rope in terms of being able to, you know, in terms of assessing him. But, you know, he wasn't playing that great. He had the pressure of the defending championship. He had the champions dinner. He has got all these things, the par three contest. His swing was a little bit out of sorts. He cracks his driver. But all of that, he still gets himself into contention. And, you know, I just think he was just taxed. I really think the weather conditions, I think it all just, as steely-nerved as he is, as mentally tough as he is, I just think he just got to the breaking point and that was it. And we just saw it, unfortunately, live on the 12th hole at Augusta National in the final round of the Masters. But yeah, to me, it just had all the makings of a man who had just had enough. Physically, maybe not as much physically, but definitely mentally and emotionally.
Yeah, I think the key point would be the problems he had with his swing. He was fighting his swing all week. And particularly off the tee, he really struggled at times. You know, yesterday in particular, you know, really, Jordan, in many ways, threw away two very big leads. Yesterday, on Saturday night, when he had that lead going into the 17th, hit two terrible drives there in 17 and 18 and fell apart there and had a bad finish and really brought everybody else back into contention and brought someone like Danny Willett back into real contention. And he's been fighting it all week. He hasn't hit the ball particularly well, but he's found a way to get it done. You know, his short game has been incredible. His putting, you know, at times is unbelievable. The up and downs he made early on today were something else. But I did think he'd actually found something when he hit that great tee shot on the 6th on the upper tier on that green, which is also a tough shot to make. Nick Faldo has always said that when he played Augusta, if he could find that upper tier and find that right pin high level, then he felt that his game was on. And Jordan found it and then, of course, ran off with a succession of birdies and really felt then that was him taking control of the championship. But when he had the driver back in his hands, like he did in number 10 and number 11, and number 11 particularly, you know, he had a poor drive again, as he has done many times throughout the week. And Saturday, he only hit seven fairways, and he was lucky at times to get away with some of the poor tee shots he actually hit. So in many ways, you can say that you can't keep holding every putt, you can't keep getting away with certain things, but he has a certain level of genius to him, certainly, the way he's able to grind these things out. But I think he was constantly fighting that throughout the week, right from the start. And he did look flustered throughout the week. He often does at times, kind of underrated level. People will say, oh, he's unflappable, he's really calm. And he is to an extent, but he has this little edge to him where he does get a little bit edgy at times. And I think he was, right from the start of the tournament, but despite that, you know, it's all credit to him that he was able to still get in that position despite that. And I think you're right there. When he got in that position and, you know, had that, you know, he was probably too aggressive with the tee shot on 12. and he paid for it. And of course, he had the second shot. Obviously, they dropped the ball and played again. That was a disaster. So it was really sad. But in the end, he fought back well. You know, they come back and almost at a moment there, he was threatening to potentially try and tie Danny with that shot on 16 and almost holding that putt for birdie. So, you know, it's been a real tough one for Jordan. You know, he's been so incredible in his last few years, achieved so much, and really proven a lot of people wrong. People, you know, obviously, maybe people wrote him off coming into this week, saying, oh, he's not playing well, he's not hitting the ball well enough, he's, you know, he can't hold everything forever. And maybe that rung true to an extent, but he fought really hard. But to lose a five-shot lead in the 10th, that, you know, will it scar? I think it will for a while. And it's going to, we'll learn a lot about him in the coming months. You know, I remember Rory McIlroy 5 years ago, Anthony, when he had that similar collapse on Sunday. It was more prolonged that day. You know, Jordan was very sudden. That's what made it so shocking. It was really abrupt in 30 minutes, and that was it, gone. Well, Rory was more prolonged. And I think Rory came back so well from that course, won that US Open at Congressional. So it can be done. You can bounce back from it. People have done it before. And Jordan will learn a lot about himself, I think, after this, and we'll learn a lot about him. But we've got to credit him for being the champion that he is, because he handled it as well as you'd expect. And in the end, you know, for a guy that's played in three Masters now, he's finished tied for second, first, and tied for second. And that's not bad at all.
No, I think any of us would take it any day of the week and twice on Sunday, that's for sure. he did. But I think you know, in your analysis there, I think you kind of proved my point as well, that all of that stuff just takes so much out of you, you know, the constantly getting out of trouble, the constantly having to get up and down. And he even said in his interview that that it was a poor choice after he hit it in the water to go to down the 13th instead of going to the yardage they knew in the drop area. And so, you know, just proof that, you know, he articulated that his world was, you know, becoming a little undone and was starting to speed up. Because if he makes four, even if he airmails it, you know, or makes four, he's still in it. You know what I mean? So the fact that he could not compartmentalize is my point. That first shot in the water, when all he does is compartmentalize. He always comes back with birdie after a bogey. You know, just like he did today with, you know, he comes back with a birdie on 13th. Obviously, that was a birdieable hole, and that was just the timing of it. But still, he still does it. I mean, that was a steely nerve chip shot from the behind the green on 13. So, and a good putt to get down. So I just feel like it was, you know, he just ran out of gas, and just, you know, he was just taxed, and that's it. But he was remarkable, as we expected him to be in the interview room. But that had to be a very that's got to be an awkward situation, that green jacket ceremony.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real cruel twist of fate, really. It's kind of insult to injury.
Yeah, particularly
it's really something else. That whole ceremony, which is awkward enough at the best of times, but today it was even more so. I think there's not too many precedents for that sort of thing happening. I think they were back in the early 60s. I think Arnold Palmer double bogeyed the last hole and had to give the jacket to Gary Player, but it wasn't quite the same situation back then. So it was tough for Jordan. It's a real tough day for him. But he's had a lot of great ones. And I think that's the thing as well. We have to remember that. We can get too down on him quickly. And in the end, we have to also remember that it's so hard to win events for these players. You know, look at Jordan, Jason Day winning 6 out of 13. We hailed that as being incredible, and it was, but he's still losing more than half of the events he's playing in. You know, Jack Nicklaus had a record, I think it was 28% winning events. He's losing more often than not, so it's hard to win, particularly majors, and all the greats have done it. You know, Jack lost majors, you know, Tiger lost a major in 2009, of course, at the PGA, and they've all done it at some point. And you know, Arnold Palmer did it a couple of occasions in the U.S. Open as well. So it has happened, and you know, they were all able to come back from it. But it's going to be a big ask for him. They kind of, kind of break it down into his head and kind of put it into context, and that's always hard. I think he panicked on the 12th from what happened there. You know, I think, again, as you say, I think he was just, he'd been fighting his game for so long this week. And he'd done it so well. He called in his coach on Sunday, of course, today to come in and have a look at his swing and try and, you know, sort some things out. People were saying he watched him on the range, that he was struggling towards the end of his range session there. So he didn't go in the first tee with a lot of confidence with his long game. And despite that, he was able to get a five-shot lead at one point on Sunday. That's remarkable. And that's testament to the skills he has, able to grind it, the putting he has, up and down skills, but also just the real kind of mental strength that he has. But even the strongest players mentally will crack at some point, you know, because he can't. it's the old adage of the kind of short game, long game argument. It's kind of goes on for ages, but it's there where you can't keep making up and downs. You can't keep holding every putt. Eventually, it'll catch up to you, particularly on a golf course like that. And unfortunately, that part of the course, Amen Corner, you know, that there's so much. It's kind of that thing where it's such a, with any great predator, it's like got that beauty that sort of masks a cruelty to it, and it can catch you out. And it's caught many players out in the past. It's just unfortunate today it caught someone out who was in a great position and someone we expected was going to go on and win. So it'll be a tough one for it. It was tough to watch. You know, you don't want to see people do that and the collapse. It's not fun to watch. But I think, you know, it's going to be, well, I'm not sure what his schedule is coming up, but I think a couple of weeks away from the game would be a good thing for him, just to kind of, you know, get away from it all and just kind of collect his thoughts and come back next time. Because in the end, he's still, you know, he got himself in a great position. He'll do it again in the future, but we'll have to wait and see. But it was shocking to watch, that's for sure. It was one of those things that kind of hit you in the gut. It was it came out of nowhere. It was somewhat unexpected. I didn't think he was playing that well. I thought he might have dropped a couple of shots in the back nine and let some guys back into it. I didn't certainly expect that. So it was shocking for us, but especially for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't we move on to the champion before we get through a few other notables that were
of
around?
Course, but we have to, yeah.
But yeah, let's talk about Mr. Willett and his performance. And you and I have talked about him. He already has a win this year. I think he maybe had two wins, I think, last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Two wins last year, win this year. Obviously, he's been trending in the majors in general. With his performance, but you know, we've talked about him. For us, it's not news, but for a lot of people, probably like, who's Danny Willett? But for most people, I think, you know, most of the people in the know Danny Willett. But I really like this guy's personality, and I obviously like his game. But you know, he seems to be a good lad, if you will.
Very hard worker. I think that's the thing that's kind of stood out about him, is he really works hard in his game. He's one of the biggest practicers in the tour. He does all the right nutritional stuff, and he works his fitness. He does everything, his mental game as well. He works really, really hard. He's very kind of single-minded in that aspect, where he's very focused on what he does. And of course, he's got the reward for it now. He's a Masters champion. And really today, it was, of all the players who were in contention today, a lot of them, you know, Spieth and Jason Day was there. We forgot about him. He was only three shots back starting the day. Didn't really feature at all. Rory, of course, had a really poor weekend. All those guys at the top of the rankings, you know, they were not very convincing. But Danny Willett today was the most assured player on the golf course. Maybe him and Dustin Johnson, but Danny Willett had the touch around the greens to match the long game that he displayed, and he was fantastic. He really put a foot wrong, and the one kind of shot that he missed was on the 17th and just over the back of the green, and he played the most incredible chip shot. You know, that's one of the hardest shots on that course, and he played it brilliantly. It was a stunning performance. A guy who was in that situation, really for the first time to have a chance to win a major and that have the lead standing on that last tee. How tight is that tee shot in 18? And he put a brilliant drive there, and his second shot was great as well. Probably the only time he really looked edgy was actually on the first putt on the 18th green. That was a little bit twitchy there, but he close enough to the hole also to finish it off. But a great performance, and of course it's a great story. You know, 11 days ago he became a father for the first time. His wife Nicole gave birth. The baby was actually due today originally, right, which is remarkable. And it's his wife's birthday today as well, which is even all the kind of the stars align, if you like, to kind of create that almost. You know, I'm not someone who believes in fate, but at times it's harder to disbelieve that than others. And today's one of those days. It was something else, but a great win for him. You know, one of the best final rounds, I think, really from anyone ever.
And you forgot.
You know, I think it's only the third time a guy shot 67 or better to win the Masters. He's done that today, which is special. And you know, he looks so good, and he looks so assured. I think also, Anthony, what also helped him today was actually playing with Lee Westwood, a guy who he was close with. They're all part of the same stable under Chubby Chandler. And you know, I think they support each other. I think they were comfortable in that environment. If he was playing with someone else, maybe it wouldn't be quite as easy for him today. But you handle it so well. And, you know, for a guy who's, you know, look at Doral last month, he played so well there too. He was really fearless. Only that last shot kind of cost him. But, you know, Danny Willett's a guy who's been kind of trending, as you say, in the right direction for a while. And now he's a Masters champion. But the last 2 weeks are life-changing in so many ways.
Yep. And you forgot the bib 89, right? That was Jackie's bib that he was wearing.
Yeah, it was mentioned as well. Yeah.
So you're right. Lots of stars aligned for the guy. And poor Lee Westwood for he has to watch another guy who he played with win a major championship. I kind of felt bad for him, but in the same token, give him all the tumultuous life he's had off the course with his divorce and whatnot. And I'm glad it was just nice to see him up there and making a little noise. So it was good for him. It was good to see him. I really like Lee Westwood. I've always been a fan of his. So I was happy to see him get some enjoyment, you know, on the golf course, because I know probably things have been difficult off the golf course for him.
Yeah, it's a week that puts him back in the right direction again. You know, he's now looking upwards. He's fallen out of the top 50. He was going in the wrong direction in his game and his career, and now he's back in there. And the Ryder Cup year as well, he's now got a great foundation to potentially get back in the Ryder Cup team in September. If he keeps showing this form he's shown this week, then I think he'll certainly be on that team. So it was a big week for Lee Westwood. Obviously, when he had that chip in on the 15th, we thought, you know, maybe this is going to be it, when he's going to come through the back door and win a major. You know, a bit like Darren Clark, his great pal 5 years ago, or 4 years ago, rather, 5 years ago, actually, the Open Championship at St. George's, when he came through and won that at 42. So sometimes when you least expect it, you know, it can happen. And maybe we felt that for Westwood, that's going to be the case this week. Obviously, came up just short in the end, but a big week for him. And you know, he's such a good player, and you know, he's actually his putting is a lot better than it has been. It, oddly enough, it was one of the great anomalies of the stats last year on the PGA Tour. He played a lot less rounds, mind you, but the PGA Tour last year, Lee Westwood was actually higher in the strokes gained putting stat than Jordan Spieth was, which is kind of mind blowing. But you know, he's getting back there, Lee, and I think he's obviously had a tough year last year. A lot to overcome. He's certainly this week's obviously going to go a long way to putting that right and put him in the right direction again. But I think he and Billy Foster, his caddy, you know, Billy Foster really was out there. You know, big thumbs up for Danny Willett's chip on 17. Gave him a pat in the back, and they both did. I think they both enjoyed watching it. You know, if they couldn't win it, I think they were happy that Danny won it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Are we getting? You know, we you and I often talk about how. The general media, the people who are looking for clicks on their web pages and advertisement rates going, you know, to maintain. They're a little quick to create some shocking or make some claims or whatever the case may be. But are we getting close to not being able to take DJ seriously down the stretch of a major championship?
Well, it's really something else. And the thing is about Dustin Johnson is that, you know, he played really well today from tee to green. He looked really good, and he had games with a lot of opportunities. And, you know, it was he had the foundation there, but he just didn't putt well enough. And, you know, that's what it came down to in the end. That's been the case before. Remember at Chambers Bay last summer when he had that?
Sure.
You know, had the US Open in his chance in his hands, and then he threw it away in the last with that out of nowhere free putt. So, you know, it's kind of, it's there, and it's a trend that's unfortunate for him now. And it's almost like a Sergio Garcia situation where he just doesn't look like he's going to do it. But I think in a way, and Garcia has almost got a mental block in it where he almost convinces himself that he can't win. I'm not sure that's quite the case with Dustin, but it's going on so long now, and he's having, you know, today he played well, and he didn't fold at any point, really, but he just didn't hold the putts. And that's just one of those things. And it's a shame because he has an immense talent, and he has such a great power to his game. The course there sets up so well for him. Really, any course sets up well for him, given the way how far he hits the ball and how well he hits the ball at times. But his putting really has to go to another level. It's just not good enough to you know, his game's good enough to get into a top five, top four, but to actually get one of those wins under his belt, he has to putt better in the key moments, and he hasn't done that, particularly today, and that's what cost him.
Yeah, I just, I'm getting to that point where I don't really, you know, I'm starting to think, you know, I don't see him as a real threat, you know, coming down the stretch.
It's turning into that kind of, the Sergio Garcia sort of trend where you see Sergio there. And Sergio was on the leaderboard at some point this week as well.
Yep.
And he fell apart yesterday. But, you know, no one really thought, oh, Sergio's going to win this week. You just don't have that belief because we don't think he actually believes it. That's the thing. Yeah, I'm not sure what's going through Dustin's head. No one really is, if there's actually much going on in there. He's not the most cerebral player in the world. We mentioned him, Bryson DeChambeau. You know, Dustin's kind of the opposite of Bryson. I think it was the quote that Phil Mickelson brought up. You know, he played a practice round with Bryson and Dustin. And you know, Phil and Bryson are two big nerds, and they just waffled on about all their stats and all their physics stuff.
Right.
And Phil said, that Dustin said to him, oh, you know, if I listen to you guys anymore, I'm going to not break 100, you know, first week, because you guys are driving me crazy. So there's not much going on in Dustin's head, but you know, yeah, it's becoming a habit now. It's becoming a trend where he hasn't got it done, and the longer it goes on, it feels the less likely it's going to be, and that's a shame because he's got a great ability, and certainly he's got a level of talent that deserves, not deserves it, Major, but he certainly has a talent that's befitting all of one. And he's given, you know, remember St. George's 5 years ago, US Open, you know, Whistling Straits 6 years ago, Chambers Bay last year, today. He's had his opportunities. And when you have five or six opportunities and really good ones to win a major, it's really in your hand at one point and you throw it away. It wasn't really the case today, but it was almost there for him. He had a chance with Spieth obviously collapsing and he didn't really take it. You know, Danny Willett, on the other hand, did take his chance. And that's what separates him from everybody else today was, you know, I think he was so focused on his game plan, on his round today. He was really determined, and he believed, I think, he was going to win this. He was so confident, and he's a very confident young guy, Danny Willett. And I think that really showed today. And maybe as well, you know, unlike Dustin, unlike Lee Westwood, you know, unlike those guys, you know, Danny Willett, in a way, is a new guy. He doesn't have those scars that maybe they have, and that maybe was telling today. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, but I just hope that in the days, used to be weeks, I guess you could say, but now with information being so immediate and we move from one thing to the next thing so quickly, I just hope in the tomorrow when you open up your email or when you open up, you know, the paper or whatever the case may be, that the story is about Danny Willett and not necessarily just about the collapse on 12 of Jordan Spieth, because we have to remember, as you said earlier, the guy shot 67, bogeyless 67.
Yep.
He had a clean card, and he birdies three of the last seven coming down the stretch. So with birdies, I think on 13 and 14 and 16.
16.
So
yep.
You know, the idea that that Jordan Spieth lost this tournament, I mean, I'm not sure that's entirely, you know, fair to Danny Willett, because Danny Willett was making his move on the back nine when that happened. And so I know that I don't think that, and I'm not trying to intimate that Spieth, you know, sensed it or anything like that. He had his own problems on his hands because he had a scramble on, he had just made a bogey on 11. You know, so I'm not saying that he influenced it, but I'm just saying that Danny was doing his thing and Jordan had his problems long before Danny made his move and was just there to capitalize on any mistake from the leaders or whoever. In this particular case, it happens to be Jordan Spieth. And, you know, he helped whittle down that lead that was at 1.5 strokes down to one. So he did his part and did as much, I think, and if not more to win it than Spieth did it to lose it. That's the way I kind of feel.
Yeah, I think it's very much the case, you know, of 20 years ago when Norman lost the Masters with a six-shot lead over 18 holes to Nick Faldo. And people forget that Nick Faldo shot 67 that day, like Danny did today, to win that.
Yeah.
It was one of the great final rounds. He meticulously took apart Augusta and at the same time Greg Norman. Obviously, it wasn't quite the same head-to-head situation today.
Right.
I think,
or the lead, and it wasn't the lead either.
I'm not going to disagree, but I think Spieth, if anyone threw something away today, it was Spieth, and it was over 2 days. I think yesterday, when he had that bad finish on Saturday in the 17th and 18th, I think that was a big issue as well. That brought guys back in the fold, and even today, of course, as well. But I think for Spieth, it was just a case of his game wasn't quite there the whole week, and he fought so hard, and he fought admirably, and he deserves all the credit for that, but it just wasn't there, and it caught up with him eventually when Danny was just so assured throughout. And in the end, you have to remember these things are, you know, it's 18 holes in a 70-hole tournament, and that's it, you have to finish it. And Danny was the one guy who finished it off today. And that, you know, Lee Westwood didn't, Dustin Johnson didn't, and Jordan didn't. And Danny was the one guy that finished it off, and that's why he won. And he probably won't get the credit that he deserves, I'm afraid. I think that's just the nature of it. Spieth's a big name player, he's a defending champion, he's a guy we want to talk about, and he had that dramatic moment, of course, in number 12. So we'll probably, the narrative will be mostly about Spieth collapsing than it will be Danny winning it. But, you know, and that is a shame, obviously, to a point. But at the same time, you know what? He's a guy with a green jacket right now. He's got a baby back home, so I'm sure he's not too disappointed about that.
No, I don't think you. I don't think he could be too disappointed with with winning.
I don't think he cares what anyone writes about it. You know, I think that's it, and it's. You know, who cares? Whatever I write or whatever you write or anyone talks about, it doesn't matter. Whatever, if Alan Shipnuck wants to write a massive piece about how it's the end of Jordan Spieth and doesn't even mention Danny Willett, it doesn't matter because Danny's got the green jacket and that's it.
Yep.
You know, it's what Ian Woosnam said. It's Ian Woosnam playing his last Masters this week, and very quietly, no one really talked about it. He played there his last one 25 years after winning. And he said, you know, the golf course is too long for me now and whatever else, but you know what? For the rest of my life, I've still got a green jacket and no one can take it away from me. And Danny Willett's got that now for the rest of his life. And it's just it is a monumental thing for us to watch and see it happen. It's a real life changer for him. He's now, he's got that thing where he gets the situation ever again to win a major. He's got one under his belt and that's a massive thing to have. And he's someone who's so determined and focused and hardworking that he will not, I don't think, kind of rest on this and sort of accept it as being, oh, I've got my major, that's it, I'm happy. I think he wants to have more. He's got big goals, I think. He's got a lot of objectives to set. He wants to be probably one of the best players in the world, and he's going to try and prove that over the next couple of years. And I think he probably will. I think he's someone who will probably contend in majors going on this year as well. I think he's that good. And another guy as well I must mention quickly is Matt Fitzpatrick, who had also shot 67 today, 21 years old, his first major as a professional. We'll finish tied for seventh. He'll be back next year. And I think, like Danny, Matt has all the tools to potentially contend in majors and maybe win one of them in the near future. I think he's a fantastic player. And I think, you know, it's a great time for English golf, obviously, British golf, but also for European golf. You know, the narrative has been almost like, you know, the European guys are kind of slightly on decline. The old guard's finish is kind of disappearing now. The Poulters, the Westwoods, Casey, he, of course, came back, you know, those kind of guys. Donald, of course, as well. They're kind of on the slide. Maybe Ryder Cup here, we're thinking, well, the Americans have the strongest team. And then you see Danny Willett come and win the Masters. So it was a massive boost for European golf, a great shot in the arm. And you know, and it's a long drought for Europe. You know, 17 years since Olaf Abel won the Masters. So it was a really significant win today. But the most significant win today would have actually been Hideki Matsuyama. Had he won the Masters today, that would have been a massive story. You know, the first Japanese major winner. It never happened. So the leaderboard was so packed with potential winners and so many interesting stories. And in the end, you know, Danny's one might not be the one that people expected, but it's a very good one nonetheless.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Paul Casey too. Another interesting story. He was up there as well. He's one of the other guys that kind of finished strong. Couldn't finish it off. Obviously, coming from too far back. But and JB Holmes also had a good solid round coming down the stretch as well. And the one thing you know, I hope people realize is now that not only does he win the green jacket, but I think he also launches himself into the top 10 in the world ranking. So I think people will be paying a lot more attention to him now that, you know, sometimes it just takes a big win like this to put you, put your face on the big screen. But, you know, the truth of the matter is he's in the top 10 in the world and deserves every bit of success through his hard work that he gets.
Yeah, and also, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when we did our last podcast, looking ahead to the Masters, and it was really a mention of, even though the guys like Jason Day, Adam Scott, have won twice this year, have played great, for me, it's also a case of, you know, that's fantastic and whatever else, but when we get to the Masters, that's when people start taking notice, that's when people pay attention, and they pay attention to who wins the Masters. You know, that guy who wins that going forward for the rest of the year is someone we will pay attention to, and Jason Day, you know, was there today, didn't do anything. We'll forget about him now for a little bit. You know, he's world number one still. I'm not sure if Jordan Spieth will take him or not, but anyway. And then you have Adam
Scott. No, I don't think so.
What wasn't even in the picture this week at all. So those guys have kind of fallen off the table of attention now. You know, they were talked about coming into this week, now they're forgotten about. And Danny Willett's now put himself in that conversation. And you know, here's the thing. You mentioned the media and bringing up stories and creating narratives and whatever else. You talked about this, I think, with John and whatever else. And it's very true that, you know, we talk about the big three, the big four. You know, is it now a big five or big six of Danny Willett or a big seven? A magnificent seven, perhaps. I don't know. Where does it end?
It's madness. As Danny Willett said when he won the Masters, it's bonkers. It's just totally bonkers.
I'll tell you one thing that's bonkers as well, and this is my one criticism of Danny Willett. Well, I have two of them. Actually, it's the second year in a row, Anthony, that a young man who is let's just say, follically challenged, has won the Masters. You know, going bald, but
yeah,
that's the way they go nowadays, apparently.
Yeah.
But yeah, and also as coming from somebody
who is follically challenged,
I
feel his pain.
But I'm sure you also feel proud that he's won the Masters because of that.
yes, he's done one for the good guys.
It's a personal achievement for all the bald guys in the world. This one was for you.
That's right.
But also, he has that aspect to him. But more than that, he has this, and I mentioned this earlier on Twitter, he has this remarkably annoying habit of using we instead of I.
Yes.
Much like Jordan Spieth.
Yes.
And it's insane. As if he has a multiple personality disorder. So Danny, he's got to get that habit out of here. You'll say, oh, we won the green jacket today. We played well today. No, it was you that played well today, Danny. And I know you want to, you know, there's a team effort and that sounds great, but it sounds mad.
It does, it does.
I'm picking it. I mean, pick it here and something a bit of a joke about it.
No,
you know,
I mean,
there's so much to admire about Danny. And he's, you know, we've talked about him for so long now as being a guy for the last sort of 2 years that could really break through him. He's almost like a largely overlooked guy that's kind of breaking through. And the thing is, the guys who, it is true, most of the golf media is dominated in the US, the big golf media to this day, the Golf Digest and so on, golf.com, and they don't pay as much attention to the guys in European Tour who are playing well. And Danny won in Dubai this year. He's come close in a couple of WGCs. He's confident. He's shown it for a while now, and now he's finally going. He's got that major, and it hasn't come out of nowhere. You know, people who pay more attention to it, like you say, will notice that, and they maybe aren't shocked by it, and are really that surprised by it, because he's someone who he has a great game, a really good all-round game. Hits the ball far. He's a great toucher on the greens. He's a good putter. He's a great mentality. So he works so hard, as I say. So Anthony, he has all the tools, Danny Willett, to really be a player who could, you know, be a feature on leaderboards to come. I don't think, you know, obviously a big statement at this stage, who knows what the future will bring, but I do not think, Anthony, that Danny Willett will be a one-hit wonder. I think he's here to stay at the top level. You say he's going to be in the top 10 now. I think he'll stay there for a while now, the next few years. Up and downs, of course, everyone has that, but I think Danny's going to be someone who will contend and will potentially win more majors in the next couple of years.
Yep, I agree wholeheartedly. He's not the first time you and I have talked about him. He's just yet another person we've talked about that has gone on to have success. And so, and you don't become number 10 in the world overnight, you know, or number 9 or whatever
exactly.
He is. So, I think he's, you know, I hope he enjoys the night. I hope he enjoys his newborn son. I hope he enjoys his wife's birthday. And I hope, more importantly, he enjoys the feel of that nice cut of the of a green jacket and starts planning his champion's dinner, which I have no idea what that would be. It's definitely not going to be a hamburger and French fries.
Well, he's from Yorkshire, and they have this little thing called the Yorkshire pudding, and maybe, you know, potatoes and whatever else, and it'll be a very kind of bland English sort of dinner. So I'm sure all the older guys are really thrilled by that. Actually, here's a question for you, Anthony.
Yes.
If you won the Masters, and you know what, you know, the last two Masters winners are balding guys, and you're bald, so
yes,
maybe it's not an impossibility that you could win the Masters one day, going by that logic.
Right.
So, if you were to win at Augusta,
yes,
what would your champion's dinner dish be?
So, if I won the Masters, now you have to understand, Kieran, even though we talk all the time, but we've never met and in person, and so I am 100% Italian. So, if I won the Masters, I would be flying in my mother, and she would be cooking pasta. And we would have all the Italian delicacies that go with pasta, meatballs and brajol, and maybe we'd have some manigotto, we'd have some, you know, we'd have some traditional Italian dinners, something that it would be one of those champions dinner that everybody could eat. And so I would personally fly in my mother, and we would be having Vita Scorsese's a traditional pasta dinner. That's what I would do.
And you know what? I like that idea too, actually. So if I win the Masters, Anthony, can I borrow your mother to make
yes.
the dinner for us?
Yes, yes. I believe, you know, I don't like to throw nationalities around too much, but I think we edge you in the cooking department.
Unquestionably true.
So, yes, if you win the Masters, you can borrow my mother, because I'm not even going to ask you what you would make, because I don't even care what you would make. I would be ordering the hamburger like everybody else does, or the steak and the lobster, whatever they order instead of whatever the champion is serving. Would you serve a traditional Scottish dish, or would you do something that would be edible for everybody?
Well, I would probably serve a traditional. No, I wouldn't. I would probably serve something fairly simple for everybody, because Sandy Lyle, you know, obviously it's haggis is kind of the traditional dish here, and I quite like haggis. It's very underrated. It's very nice and tasty. It sounds horrible to you. If you read about how it was actually made and what it actually consists of, you would never touch it, but it's nice. And Sandy Lyle, he won in 88. He came back the following year and served haggis. So I can't really replicate that. So I would I like the Italian route. So, you know, tonight, actually, for dinner, I had spaghetti bolognese. So I had an Italian dish tonight as well. So there you go. I'd probably go with that.
There you go. Well, I know you probably know this, but maybe our listeners don't know this. But when Sandy Lyle did serve haggis, and someone went over to Jack Nicklaussen, told him what they had mentioned to him, they said, "Oh, do you know what Sandy's serving for dinner?" And Jack said, "No." And he said, "Oh, well, he's serving haggis." And Jack said, "Oh, that's fantastic. I hope he likes it." And so Jack was having no part of that. So, but that's about it. We're just about out of time here. But Kieran, always a pleasure to talk to you, and it was just good to sort of. I was glad this was more of a therapy session, as much
exactly.
as it was.
I was
you know, this was. I needed somebody to articulate and help me work through all this this chaos that was today. I mean, what turned out to be a bland couple of days certainly made up for it in 9 holes. So, always a pleasure to talk to you, and great to have you on.
I'm glad that I could have been your therapist tonight. And you know what? You have my phone number. If you ever need any help or advice, I'm here for you.
All right, man. All right, Kieran. Always a pleasure to talk to you. We'll catch up with you
thanks,
next time.
Cheers.
Cheers, pal.